building a business, as you know, is something that has to happen from a labor of love, I think, because it's so difficult and so hard to begin with that you have to really want it.
Welcome back to Happy Porch Radio, the podcast for ambitious agency leaders. This season is all about Umbraco, the friendly CMS. Join your host, Barry O'Kane, as he talks to web agency leaders and Umbraco experts about the challenges and opportunities that a specific technology like Umbraco brings to our agencies.
Welcome to another episode of Happy Porch Radio Season 2. One of the things that came up quite a lot in the Umbraco and Business survey we did before the start of this season was e-commerce. By the way, you can check out the results and report from that survey in the show notes. In future episodes, we will speak to agency leaders who have built successful e-commerce projects on Umbraco. But in this episode, we have the pleasure of hearing from Soren, who is the founder of one of the main e-commerce platforms in the Umbraco ecosystem, WooCommerce. We talk about Soren's wealth of e-commerce experience and how his drive and passion helped him through the tough process of building a product business to the international success that it is today. And I'm totally fascinated by the duality of product versus service that many agencies juggle, and it's really interesting to hear Soren's take on that, as he built a great product company and works with so many agencies today. So keep listening to hear Soren share his expertise on starting a successful product business, on e-commerce in Umbraco, on how a product mindset might help your agency, and much, much more.
My name is Soren Spelling-Lund, and I'm the founder of WooCommerce, which is an e-commerce platform for Umbraco, and probably the first one even so, and definitely the biggest one these days. So basically, I was able to take my passion for software development and use it to build a product. So Umbraco has been very good to me in that sense that I probably wouldn't have been able to follow my passion if it hadn't been for Umbraco, basically.
And what was that led up to the founding of WooCommerce? Were you working with Umbraco in different ways? I know you were a developer, obviously, but were you working with Umbraco explicitly or with other tools as well?
Yeah, that was actually interesting. I had no prior insight into Umbraco prior to launching WooCommerce. So in my previous job, I was basically a consultant. I managed a bunch of teams that did e-commerce solutions on other platforms. So I'd never had a chance to work much with content management systems. It was all commerce platforms all the time. So Umbraco really came about because I saw, along with the other founding partner of WooCommerce, a need in the market for building a platform that would actually do both content and commerce in one platform. That was actually something we spent a lot of time building up ourselves in an agency setting. But it was just, you know, we were spending a lot of time gluing together disparate platforms. And it was never great because, as you know, when you're dealing with clients and billable hours and all that, you can never really focus on, you know, the really interesting bits of creating something that you can reuse from project to project. So we basically had to spin out WooCommerce to make sure that we could actually focus all of our attention on building the product. And through that, all of my experience with Umbraco came. So I think I'm probably coming at Umbraco from a very different place than most other developers, because from my perspective, Umbraco is all about all the integrations we can do in the backend, all the things we can enable by gluing things together, and the act of building sites is almost secondary, which is a little counterintuitive, I guess.
A couple of interesting things you said there. One was, you know, it was a passion thing. A lot of developers and a lot of agency people as well want to or have a product or a, you know, a package or something that's sort of more on the software, on the product side, but it can be a real challenge to do both. Was it really a sort of passion-based thing? I want to create this. And was it based on the business opportunity? What was the crunch part of that decision? I'm going to go for the creating this whole thing myself.
So it was a little bit of both, I think. Building a business, as you know, is something that has to happen from a labor of love, I think, because it's so difficult and so hard to begin with that you have to really want it to make it go, right? But it was also powered by the fact that we actually saw a need in the market. So we knew that the thing that we were building would actually probably be something that people would want. At least that was something that was super important to me, because if you're anything like myself, you probably have maybe 10 or 20 ideas in the drawer somewhere that you coded a little bit on, but never really completed. So it was very important for me to have as a goal to bring this thing out to people. So we actually, when we launched WooCommerce, We actually did it with an agreement with Niels of presenting it at Code Garden. So that sort of gave us some motivation to actually complete it in time. And I think that's great. If you can set yourself a deadline, a real deadline, that's not just, yes, I want this completed at such and such time, but something where somebody is relying on you. I think that's key to actually making it work.
I'm really interested then in the journey from that point. It's you and one or two other people. You've agreed something like that with Niels and you're going to go for it, to the journey to get to the point now where e-commerce is multinational and growing and so on. Just in the highest level, what's that journey been like?
It's been crazy. It was a lot of work, but again, the goal was basically to build something and create a company out of it. So that sort of fueled the journey. So I think that the hardest part of it was basically the first couple of years, where it was basically just myself on the road, you know, traveling around to agencies, trying to convince them that it was a good idea to use WooCommerce. It's pretty difficult to sell a platform when nobody's using it, I can tell you that. So it was a lot of driving around, personal meetings, showing the thing off. But we were fortunate in the sense that there were lots of people that could see that the idea had potential, even though the first versions might not have been, you know, everything you hope for in a commerce platform.
That, to me, is where the real, as you said, the passion, the labor of love comes in. You know you want to create this thing, but you have a long journey to go, the entrepreneurial lonely journey to go for building that up and both creating the platform and the technology and, you know, overcoming the technical hurdles. But if you were traveling around and having those conversations, that must have been interesting and challenging time.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's, you know, just the time alone spent on the road, lots and lots of time spent there. But I think we were also fortunate in the sense that we had Umbraco to back us up. So Umbraco was something that even back in 2009 that everybody or a lot of agencies knew about and was interested in. So through the integration with Umbraco, we basically had an in with a lot of companies. And to this day, that's still one of the things that actually powers the sales efforts of the company, because we can look at an agency and tell if they're using Umbraco and maybe they want to do some e-commerce on Umbraco, then the conversation becomes a little more useful than just cold calling a person and saying, hey, would you like a commerce platform? It's more about, we can see that there might be a potential fit here. So we're already, you know, through the first door, and the second door is a little easier because it becomes a yay or nay on the commerce bit. If a company is doing e-commerce on Umbraco, it makes sense to have at least to have a conversation about it. And it may lead to something, it might not, but at least you're through the looking glass, as it were, on the first bit of the conversation.
And I'm really interested as well in that part of the conversation with agencies. So from the agency perspective, a hypothetical agency who's committed to Umbraco to some extent, knows what it is, understands the platform and its powers and its weaknesses, and then they're looking for, or you approach them to about the e-commerce and about e-commerce in those early days. What were the kinds of challenges that the agencies have or had that WooCommerce was trying to plug, and how were you working with the agencies? Was it as a sort of a partnership thing, or were you providing just the software? You know, how did you build up that over time?
From the very beginning, the business model of WooCommerce, to use a couple of boring words together there, was basically to build the platform and focus on the software, so not deliver any, you know, any solutions on the side or anything like that. I wanted a really clean approach to how we go to market with this thing. So it right from the beginning, it was all about delivering the software and the professional services to the agencies that needed it. And from there, they could turn around and build an actual solution to the client. So basically, we just augmented their toolbox from the get-go. And back then, it's even the case today, a lot of the common stuff built on Umbraco was bespoke. So basically, the story was, if it was a company that was interested in e-commerce, is, yeah, we're doing commerce, but we're doing it bespoke every time. And we've built something that's kind of like our standard thing, but we don't really have the time to put into maintaining it and building up all the capabilities. So WooCommerce turned out to be a great fit because we could typically deliver more out of the box, even in the earlier versions, than what individual agencies were able to maintain themselves. So it became a pretty straightforward conversation. The only caveat there was that they had to learn something all over again. So they had to retrain and figure out how they could do it. And actually, one of the very first questions I got back then was, can we get the source code for the thing? Because it wasn't that common that a commerce platform was fully extensible in, you know, any aspect of it. So everybody sort of assumed that they would need the source code for the thing. But we all know today that that's a fairly bad approach, because when you fork the thing, you're forever tied to that version. So having something that was super extensible was really key back then. It was actually something that allowed us to go international very early on, because again, with Umbraco at our backs, it meant that we could have discussions with companies in the UK, in the US, in Germany, all over the place, not in Scandinavia. But we hadn't actually expected that when we launched the software. So basically, we catered to the Scandinavian market to begin with. But the extensibility turned out to be a saving grace for us, because when we started launching projects along with partners in the UK, for example, a lot of the things that we didn't deliver out of the box could actually be extended in and worked around in the beginning there. So that was quite an interesting thing, that you build something where you're not quite sure how much can it actually be extended. We just used, you know, good practices for building software. And it turned out to be super extensible, and it turned out to actually enable us to do more in other countries than we expected right out the gate. So it was interesting to be surprised like that, when you build every line of code and you're actually still surprised at what it could do.
I guess that's one of the joys of creating something, when it gets out into the real world and you can see it sort of take a life of itself.
It was actually something I quite enjoyed in my agency days as well, that when you build a piece of software to spec to a client, you're still surprised how it's actually used when people get it in their hands, right? It's typically not the way you thought they would use it. And I've always found that fascinating, to see how else can a piece of software be used, whether it's bespoke or something standard, doesn't really matter. It's just always interesting to see the wonderful ways that people tend to break things because you didn't expect them to use it in quite that way.
And then, as you say, turning that into an opportunity and learning from it and saying, okay, well, that's what they were trying to do, so how can we run with that and really empower what they're actually trying to get to?
That's exactly it. Feedback from day one has been super important. The very first version of what we built was built based on our own experiences of what we needed when we were in the agency space. And that was great. We were in the trenches. We saw exactly what the customers were asking for. And so we could turn around and build something that was useful. But over the years, we've sort of been more and more removed from the client space, because we're not directly involved in the projects. And that actually turned out to be a problem, because it meant that all of our feedback were secondhand, so to speak, because it was feeding in through partners. So it became super important that we be in contact with both partners and the partners' clients to know, how are you actually using the thing, so we could, you know, continue to be relevant? Because I think that's what happens with software that's been around for a long time. If you forget the feedback part of it, you end up having something that was relevant, you know, 10 years ago or 5 years ago. But the space is moving so fast that it's imperative that you listen to the feedback and you incorporate it into your product. So feedback is really one of our core values. And I think I remember a tweet by Microsoft when they released Windows 10. That was sort of fun to me to read, because they said, well, we released Windows 10 and that's great. And we believe that what made Windows 10 great is because we asked customers what they wanted from the OS. And I was like, yeah, that kind of makes sense.
Yes.
It's logic that it would work like that. So it was surprising that they had that, you know, eureka moment and actually felt they needed to tweet about it. So in lots of business, the feedback portion is forgotten. So you forget to empathize with your customers and your clients, right? Imagine the last time you were at a restaurant. If the restaurant manager had asked you at the end of the meal, can we sit down for 2 minutes and just tell me about, you know, one thing that you would change about this visit you had, this meal here, they would be able to do small incremental changes that would improve the overall experience just by asking that simple question, you know, 3 times a day. They would be able to provide much better services than ultimately what most restaurants are offering, right? So, and I think in most aspects of business, the feedback is key to actually making that happen.
From an agency perspective, what's really interesting about that is that is a huge part of creating software, yeah, and improving and building and maintaining and allowing the software to be powerful and good. And within agencies, it's interesting that earlier on you touched on that point of not just the challenge of maintaining and doing things a lot where it's 100% custom and then it becomes a headache and everything is, you know, unique and there's no efficiencies, but also you haven't got that feedback loop coming in. And for me, I think that's really interesting, because there is a line with agencies at which you want to be able to really customize and provide the real high-quality solutions to your clients. But at the same time, you don't want to be creating this mess of individual projects everywhere, which are just going to cause you ongoing maintenance headaches.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Coming back to e-commerce then, so then that idea of saying, okay, well, we've got these two platforms, the content and the e-commerce side, that can be the baseline that can remove you know, a significant chunk of all that customization, but still allow us the flexibility to do it from the agency perspective.
Definitely. If you can get the best of both worlds, that's where you want to be. But I think what we've learned over the years and the principles that we apply to product development is that there's a perception out there that these principles, you know, like the solid principles and LSP and all those types of principles that are sort of commonly understood, that there is a cost associated with using them. It's true that there is a cost associated with using them, but what we found over the years is that if you apply them every day, there's really not a cost associated with the day-to-day operations, the cost in adopting principles that enable you to build awesome software, bespoke or standard. It's really in adopting those principles, because they require you to think in a completely different way than, maybe not a completely different way, but they require you to alter the way that you approach building software to some extent, more or less, depending on how you're doing it today. But once they are adopted, what you'll find is that the software that you're building and the modules you're putting together are actually much more reusable from project to project. So even in an agency setting, it is possible to create a baseline or a set of components that can be reused from project to project. I just don't see it happening so much. I see lots of ideas to get there, and lots of agencies that want to get there, but don't quite know how to get there, which is too bad, because at the end of the day, if you build something modular, if you build something that's extensible, that can apply to a project, a bespoke project as well. And if you get some components out of it that you can reuse from project to project, I think everybody wins, because at the end of the day, it's all about getting away from the boilerplate and onto what's actually creating value for a client. If you can get there faster, it's more interesting for the client from a value perspective, and much more interesting from a developer that doesn't have to build the same thing over and over again, right?
That is exactly where I was headed, with this idea of having modular or frameworks or something that's within the agency as well as within a product sort of mindset. And as you're just talking about sort of strong developer principles, solid and so on, but applying those principles to an agency context, in my experience with the agencies I've worked with or partnered with over the years, can be very challenging. And I think that's often because they're kind of in this constant firefighting mode where they think, exactly like you just said, there's a cost to going back, what feels like going back to put proper structure in place around some of the projects, whereas in actual fact, that's why they're kind of in this firefighting mode. You know, it's a vicious circle.
I totally agree. It's the age-old adage about, you know, sharpening the saw. No, we're too busy cutting down the tree to actually sharpen the saw so we can go faster on the next 100 trees. I think it boils down to the fact that we're all human beings, and for a human being, the concrete is easy and the abstract is difficult. And so when you need to make an investment in the next 100 trees, that becomes more abstract than the tree you're currently cutting down, right? So you tend to focus on what's at hand. And that makes sense, because for the one tree, it will probably be faster to just cut it down with a dull saw. But when you need to do it over and over again, that's where you see the benefits of actually, you know, sharpening the saw. And the same thing applies to software development. If you can build a culture where these principles matter and where you leverage them in day-to-day development, there is no overhead associated with it, because it's just the way you do things. If you build something modular, well, you don't have to think about the design anymore. I remember when I started out implementing these principles in the agency I was part of, it was a huge investment just learning the principles and how to apply them. And naturally, when you pick up a new set of principles, you have to understand them. You can't really bend the rules so much. You have to apply them pretty strictly, you know, just to feel them out and see how they work. And so you end up doing some things that you wouldn't have done in a regular setting, because you're in a learning mode, right? So you have to spend the time. For myself, it was all about, we needed to raise our code quality. We need to be able to test the code that we were building in the agency setting. And so test-driven development became a great way to build the projects. But of course, we were spending a ton of time re-architecting our solutions so we could actually test them. We were spending a ton of time creating tests. But the whole goal of that was actually to change the design, not so much for the tests. And so, but over time, it became a natural way of working. So we didn't need test-driven development so much anymore, because it just sort of worked itself out. And the quality we were outputting was of higher quality just by virtue of using the principles, not so much from the unit testing, because there's only so many situations that you can foresee when you're creating a test cases. But what we ended up doing is basically we ended up having smaller modules that were easier to replace with something new. So we didn't have to worry so much about replacing a module somewhere in the system that something would break all the way over in the other corner of the system. That's typically what ends up happening in a when a system is not factored properly, that you change something over here in the lower right-hand side of the corner, and something unexpected breaks over to the left, something you didn't see because things were tied together in unexpected ways. But when things are componentized, there's much clearer contracts and interfaces between things. It just makes it much easier, much more of a, you know, a safe process of changing things. So it doesn't become a challenge to change things. It's just something you do without thinking about it too much.
Also, those changes are something that may not happen, again, to take it back to an agency implementing even a smallish site for a client. The project is completed, the site's good, but then the change and that sort of knock-on effect of a change that you just described can happen later down the line, some small change request or a fix or even a design change. And because of it, it's not sort of structured well or even thought through, architected well, you end up with a maintenance and you end up with this thing that just gets worse and worse and messier over time. And then from the agency perspective, the initial project was fine. You know, everything was good. We were profit. Everybody's happy. Success. But then on an ongoing basis, this project and the client becomes less and less happy. The project becomes more and more painful.
It's an interesting dynamic when you think about it, because I'm pretty sure this is still the case today. But so when you implement a project, the first phase that you talk about where everything is good, it tends to be over fairly quickly. And because you're in a bidding war with other agencies and things like that, you have to, in some cases, at least pressure price on your hourly rates and things like that. And so you end up maybe not, you know, making a ton of money on the first implementation. The actual revenue comes from the ongoing maintenance of the thing. Whenever there's a new change request or something that needs to be added, you know, over the years, when you have a client, maybe over 3 to 5 years or something like that, that's where it starts to get really interesting from a revenue perspective. But it also becomes harder and harder to keep doing that, because, you know, when you're building on top of something shaky, it's just going to become more and more shaky over the years, unfortunately.
Definitely. And for me, then, and the stories that I see, that's compounded by having, multiple shaky and slightly different or two different shaky platforms that are 3 years old, and you feel like you're not getting the margins and the sort of lifetime value. And as you say, the revenue, the ongoing revenue to keep the clients and keep that really fundamental part of the agency business.
When we founded the company, we figured we would do the platform and nothing else. But it turned out over the years that we actually had to do many other things to make sure that projects were, or at least help make projects more of a success. So the very first thing we did was to adopt what we call proactive support. So basically just, you know, having a person assigned to every project that is being done on WooCommerce, on the technical team here, to ensure that the platform is being used, you know, in the proper way, or maybe just help out in the initial design of the solution, just to make sure that the application of the platform, you know, was to the highest, I wouldn't say quality, but at least we had given our inputs on how it could be done. And if an agency decides to do something else, that's fine. But at least we were in there and giving some advice. When a solution lives over many, many years, then it just becomes super key. And over the years, we found that the support is one thing, and it's super important. It's something people really enjoy, having a direct line onto the product team. That so when you have a question on how you want to do, you know, how should I do differentiated pricing in a B2B setting, or how should I do, you know, XYZ requirement for a client, we've probably seen it before, because we do so many e-commerce projects every year with partners that we can sort of share those experiences. But we also found that we could go one step further and actually start packaging up some of those tools and solutions in our demo stores. So we basically, when we initially released our demo stores, they were for that purpose only, to demo what we could do. But over the years, they've sort of changed, and we started referring to them as accelerators instead. So basically just creating a site where there are some components and some architecture and some things, some principles applied that an agency can adopt if they want to and start using. So basically a blueprint for what a solution could be. Of course, it's completely optional. You could, you know, do your own thing if you already have a, you know, strong feelings on how things should be. But I think that's one way that we can ensure that more of the platform is leveraged and some of the principles are, you know, showed off. So it's not just about doing e-commerce. It's also about just doing awesome software, basically, based on those principles that everybody know they should probably be looking at, but time doesn't maybe not permit that you do it.
What you're talking about there is kind of implementation and training and resources to help them use e-commerce and, as you say, shortcut things and learn and so on. And how much, from e-commerce's point of view, from your point of view, how much effort and energy you put into helping like developers versus building relationships with, you know, decision makers, people who actually pay the checks?
Yeah, so we've actually, I would say, I probably shouldn't say this as the founder of the company, but I think we actually failed a little bit in that respect, to begin with at least. So in the beginning of the life cycle of the company, it was all about partners. It was all about, you know, enabling partners, building things and getting feedback from the partners exclusively. And that meant that we, over the years, I realized that we were actually getting a very particular type of feedback, because it was all about what we could do to make the partner successful. And that was great, right? That's the first thing you need to make sure that you have something, because at the end of the day, the first thing that always happens is somebody grabs WooCommerce and starts implementing a store on it. So from that perspective, it was fine. But what we forgot a little bit in the process, and where I believe we failed a little bit, is we forgot the clients in the process. We forgot that the people that are actually paying the bills need to, you know, get value from the platform. And we need to show exactly how that value can be leveraged. And so it's great that we have an app platform in WooCommerce, so you can build extensions. It's great that it's easy to upgrade and all that. But the client doesn't really care so much about that. From their perspective, I'm sorry to say, they probably don't care that it's Umbraco or WooCommerce or anything like that. They just need to do, from our perspective, business online. And if it's Magento or Umbraco or WooCommerce or whatever, they don't really care. They just need the value. And so one of the things that we're pivoting around a little bit is starting to look more at the problem from the digital merchant's perspective, so we can see exactly what is it actually they need, so we can focus our product development efforts on that. So bulk updating massive catalogs, doing experiments on the web store. So if I change the price on a product like this, how would that affect conversion rates and stuff like that? I think is something that a lot of platforms need to do, but they're not. They've actually, if we circle back to the restaurant story from before, we actually forgot to ask the visitor in the restaurant how we could make it better the next time, right? So as a result, we're actually working on projects now that are very focused on the digital merchant experience. How can we help them actually realize the results they want, which is basically selling more stuff online and realizing higher revenues? And there are actually some awesome opportunities there from a product development perspective, even from just, you know, from a developer perspective, there are some very tricky situations you can go in and deal with. So that's where we're basically focusing. We're trying to ask the questions that the digital merchant might ask and focusing more on their experience. So a great example of that is something that we're working on at the moment, which is we want to see if we can imbue the platform with more intelligence, basically. Today, what happens is that a merchant running a store on almost any platform out there when it comes to commerce, and even content for that matter, needs to realize that there are some situations they need to deal with. So a very simple example is a product is running out of stock, right? It happens every day, but it's something that the merchant must realize on their own and then deal with by creating another purchase order with their vendor or whatever. But what if the platform was actually able to tell the merchant that there is a situation brewing over here that might potentially need their attention? Or what if it could, you know, suggest a fix for that situation? And if you turn around and apply it to Umbraco, it's already happening a little bit with that latest feature in Umbraco, where it can tell you about the health of the website. It's sort of the same thing, right? Where it goes in proactively and tells you, well, here is something that you should probably deal with. But if you think about it, if you can apply that, not just on the technical level, but also on the business level, there would actually be some pretty interesting scenarios that you could start to do.
That's really interesting, as you say, and it ties back to what you were saying before about the speed of change in the industry and keeping up to it and keeping ahead of that curve in order to be able to provide the value. And as a software company, you're able to do that, and an agency trying to juggle both couldn't. As WooCommerce has matured and grown, how has your relationship from a technical sense with Umbraco, the platform, changed?
I wouldn't say it's changed all that much. I think one of the things that Niels has been very successful is, you know, being neutral in the package ecosystem. So we're not the only ones doing commerce. So, and of course, from Niels' perspective, it's great that there are multiple packages that can do this stuff. It's also a dangerous game for him to play favorites with someone like ourselves or one of the other players, because maybe we would turn around and become a little miffed if somebody else got more focus. So I wouldn't say our relationship has changed all that much. It's still sort of a very loose relationship that we have, where if there's an opportunity, like when we launched the support for Umbraco Cloud this summer at Code Garden, to work together, we'll do that because it makes sense, right? And I think that's actually one of the strengths of Umbraco, that we don't have a lot of formalized agreements. There are not a lot of contracts and signing going on for all sorts of things. It's more about when it makes sense, we'll work together. And I think the last summer there, that was a great example of where they got something out of it, we got something out of it, and that's a great way of working.
Looking then forward for the in the future, and particularly in the Embraco ecosystem, like you just mentioned, things like Embraco Cloud and e-commerce integrating or fitting into that and other things, how do you feel, and I guess I'm asking this question again from the agency perspective, where do you feel the opportunities are for an agency who's maybe already committed to or who is committing to Embraco, the platform? Where do you think the real opportunities for agencies to grow?
It's a little different from market to market. So there are, you know, I have an opportunity to work with the agencies in every market, basically. And so the maturity of the individual markets has a lot to say. But if we talk about a mature market like the Scandinavian one or the UK market, there's actually one thing that's a lot of opportunity, and that is going for more complex solutions, basically. For a long, long time, it's been enough to be able to implement simple content sites on Embraco, and that will continue to be a driving factor in Embraco by virtue of the product being what it is. But I think there is a lot of opportunity in actually taking a step back from the technology and looking at how can we help the business, the clients, actually become more successful. So look at the business side of things, look at the digital strategy and all that. And I know it's a little fluffy, but basically, you know, start asking questions of the clients, challenging them a little bit on the requirements that they're putting forth. What I found in my agency days was whenever we could challenge a client on their assumptions or their business model or something like that, that was always something they appreciated. And I don't think we should be afraid of doing that. I think as agencies, you have a lot of opportunity to see a lot of projects out there, whereas a client only sees maybe one or two in their entire career. So it's important that agencies actually challenge the clients and start looking more at the business side of things. And of course, coming from the e-commerce space, there's a lot of opportunity on that side as well, right? If you look at the combined turnover on the commerce side of things, that's actually a bigger opportunity, you know, dollar for dollar than the content side of things. But we also find that there's some fear and uncertainty as how to address the e-commerce projects. They are inherently more complicated. They involve more integrations, they involve payments, they involve transactions and all that good stuff. So they can be a little daunting getting started. And I believe that e-commerce as a company has a responsibility of trying to get more agencies on the commerce bandwagon, as it were, because there is so much opportunity and lots of interesting technical challenges in a commerce project. And you shouldn't be afraid of jumping into something like that. The first one is always super difficult, but the first Embraco project someone did was probably also super challenging because you're learning everything as you go, or you need to pick up some things on the fly. That's always the case, right? So if there's one thing I should say, it is focus on the business, challenge the business, because it leads lots of opportunity that may not even be Embraco related, maybe something completely different. But at the end of the day, it's all about helping the clients.
Because it's what we were talking about earlier, and because it's something that I think about a lot, I want to tie that back to this idea of finding ways to apply proper principles and so that you're not spending a lot of time redoing things or managing messy projects in order to create the space to have this kind of conversation that you're describing there, challenging things and looking for the extra value that can be provided.
To put it in a cheesy way, I think we need, as a business or as a vertical, we need to focus on time to value. And I know it's a little cheesy, but it sort of wraps in a couple of good things together. If you focus on this, you also focus on reducing risk, and you focus on reducing the time that it takes to build something to get that V1 out the door. And it also requires you to focus on how much can you actually reuse from project to project. So it is cheesy. I realize that, I acknowledge that, but it's I think it's super important that we focus on building all the fun stuff, if nothing else, from a purely selfish perspective, right? Instead of building all the plumbing stuff, let's focus on building all the interesting, technically challenging stuff, right?
Yeah, interesting technically, interesting from a business sense, and basically where a lot of us want to be.
Yep, pretty much.
Thank you, Søren. I really appreciate your time, like I said. So if people who aren't already working or haven't yet jumped into properly looking at e-commerce want to go and check it out and find out more, what should they do? Where should they go?
If you want to try it out and play around with it, we have demo sites running where you can try out how it actually works inside of Embraco. So that's at demo.ucommerce.net. And you can access both backend and front end. And if you just want to, you know, have a chat about commerce, go to ucommerce.net, my handsome face will pop up as you scroll around the website. So that was not my decision. I just want to make sure that that's that's completely understood. But it will pop up and you can click it and we can get in touch. But try it out, play around. We like to remove as many barriers to getting started as possible. So that's definitely one. And we actually also offer free training just to make sure that everybody gets started on the right foot. So if you really want to get into commerce, you can actually, you know, spend a couple of days with us for free online and see what it's all about. Try out the APIs. We build a full web store in the course of 2 days. So that's pretty cool.
And I'd love to have spent more time and dug into the entrepreneurial story, but I wanted to need to come back to Umbraco.
We can always talk about the entrepreneurial stuff. It's, I think from my perspective, I want to be where I as a person grow. And the entrepreneurial stuff, getting into the business side of things, that's really a painful experience, but it's also a great experience to learn and grow and evolve, basically.
In this story of building the successful company, were there any times when you were at that point in the dark place when you're saying, actually, I'm on the verge of stopping, I'm on the verge of giving up and going and doing something else?
Oh, yeah. There was one time, this is a little personal, so, but there was one time where it was just myself and there was a lot of pressure to make sure that we, generate some revenue so we could pay salaries and things like that. And I remember one meeting I had with the chairman of the board where we were talking about the business side of things. We needed to do budgets. We needed to do all sorts of things. And I'd never done a budget before. So that was one thing, but that was, you know, something that could be overcome. But B, and more importantly, I had no information on which to build that budget. Right. And we talked about it a lot. And I remember I had to leave work and go and attend a play with my kids. And I never actually got to the point where I attended that play with my kids because I couldn't actually leave my car when I got to the school because I sat there actually bawling my eyes out because I was under so much stress and pressure. That was a tough time. But I think that's where the labor of love comes in, that you need passion. You need to realize that building something like this is a marathon. It's not a sprint. You know, you have to realize that you need those big energy reserves to make sure that you can keep on going. It will become much more fun when you actually have some colleagues and you actually have some people you can spar with. But when you're there on your own, that's a little tough. So I would actually recommend people not doing something like this on their own. I think having three people start a company, that's a good number, because when you disagree on something, there's always somebody that can sort of flip it over to one side or the other, and you actually can get some different roles in. So one of the things I wish we had from the start was actually somebody more business savvy, so we didn't have to learn everything on the fly. These days, it's not so much of a problem because you will learn, I guarantee it, or you will die, right? But if you can sort of bring together that salesy, businessy person, the techie person, and a marketing person, I actually think that is a great mix to have. And it gives you a shoulder to cry at, basically, as well. So you can discuss when things become a little hard and a little difficult. You have somebody you can actually share that experience with.
What about now, when you look at e-commerce and what's happening and the growth and the different things that have been going on? How does that feel now?
It's a little unreal, to be perfectly honest about it. Looking at 20 odd people around you, something you built. Doing international expansion. We have offices in the US and the UK. We're looking at opening up in Benelux and in Germany and Australia. It's just that amount of activity is just, you know, crazy to behold. So sometimes I think it's important, and I think that this is important for everybody, to just stop and realize how far you've actually come. If you're a junior developer that's been at it for maybe a couple of years, just stop after a couple of years and see how much you've actually grown and appreciate it. Instead of always looking forward, I think as human beings, we could do with being more in the present, basically, instead of always thinking forward about what's the next thing, what do we need to solve, what do I need to do tomorrow and all that. Just stop and realize that where you are right now is potentially pretty good, and enjoy it for a little bit. And then you can power on with the new challenges.
Okay, I mean it this time. Thank you so much. Really appreciate your time.
No worries. It was a pleasure.
You can get all the links and notes from this episode on happyporchradio.com. If you enjoyed the show, please spare a moment to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. Thanks for listening.